Hello and welcome to the Warm and Wound podcast. My name is Blake Bettner, and I'm happy to be joined by Zach Weiss today. Zach, hello.
Hello. Thank you for having
me. We've also got Zach Kazan joining us. Zach Kazan, hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing real well. We're coming to you from in studio, actually. We are joined with our producer, Josh, over there. Hello, Josh. How are you? He's doing well. Okay. And he's wearing a G-Shock, so he's looking good over there, and he's got us all set up. So, yeah, it's been a while since the three of us have been on the podcast together. We've had a lot of great guests on lately. Been really excited to talk to some of the people that we've had a chance to talk to. But we've not had a chance to go over a lot of the news and a lot of the recent kind of goings on and releases since Watches and Wonders mid last month. So here we are. We're going to be talking about some of the new things that have happened in the month or so since the show. Before we get to that, there's a few other things that I wanted to talk about. But first, let's do a wrist check. Zach Kazan, what are you wearing?
I'm wearing a watch that I have in for review. It's the Oris Divers 65 Cotton Candy Editions. This is a bronze Diver 65 vintage-inspired dive watch. And the one I'm wearing has kind of like a aquamarine teal color.
That's right. There's three dial colors of this watch. I think you have all three of them. Which one is your preference?
I think probably the darker blue one is my favorite so far. Honestly, first impression, like the dials are fine, but like the real star of the show is the case and bracelet on these watches.
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's the new case size. Yes. Right? Is that what you like about it? Or
yeah, it's yeah, great. Yeah. It fits perfectly. And the Diver 65 bracelet that Oris does with that like extreme taper is super comfortable. It really feels like a vintage watch in the best possible way.
Somebody had handed you all three of those watches and didn't tell you what they were called, what would you have assumed their names were?
I mean, I
would I you have just come it's up it's with Cotton like, Candy off the top
yeah,
of your
I
head?
Mean, Cotton Candy is kind of like the perfect name, like something, you know, it's hard to get like the candy imagery, you know, out of my mind, like now that it's like that's associated with these watches. But there's something just kind of like, you know, very like spring or summer like about the dial colors. It's very playful. I enjoy what they're doing with these for sure.
The colors also remind me, maybe this is a New York thing, but like at diners, there used to be that like bowl of kind of gross but also delicious mints. They're on these like pastels.
Yeah.
Just make me wonder, like, where's the like lemon yellow one of those?
It would like kind of dissolve in your mouth, but then you get a little chewy, maybe.
Yeah. You know, they're absolutely not healthy.
Yeah.
Sanitary. You know.
Cotton candy is much better, I'm sure.
Zach
Weiss, what are you wearing on your wrist?
Today I have on the Christopher Ward C63 Sealander Elite.
Elite.
Okay. This is in for review. It is also. This is a prototype, so there's actually a couple little things on it that are not quite accurate to the production model, such as on the back, they actually list the weight of the watch, but this one just says zero. So it weighs more than nothing.
It's going to list the weight of the watch.
Yeah, so they're very proud of the fact that they've achieved a 45-gram weight on this watch via a titanium case and some hollowing out of the interior. So one of the cool features of the watch is like there's actually... I mean, it's sort of like skeletonized, but it's not the movement that's skeletonized. It's like the movement holder. So there's some just gaps there. And then, of course, that it has this push button telescoping crown, which is sort of the star of the show in terms of features.
Yeah, and that's one of the watches that I think we will probably end up talking about today. I cannot think off the top of my head of another watch that lists its weight on its case back, though.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that.
That seems a lot.
This is Richard Mille, like featherweight or something.
Okay.
They're very proud of their weight, but I don't know that they would list it on the case back.
Yeah.
Richard Mills.
Maybe brands should.
I wouldn't get my weight like tattooed on my arm or something like that.
Like who needs to know that, you know, the jewels and all those other things on the movement, like how much does your watch weigh?
Yeah. Strangely, maybe that's more practical than this should be a new trend. It should start listing the weights of the watch.
But keep it
on the case
back.
Which probably means more to you.
Like, do not put it on the dial. We don't need more stuff on the dial.
Not on the dial.
Yeah.
I don't have in my head though, like 45 grams doesn't mean anything. I can't I have no reference point for that.
I think a typical, like, I feel like watches that aren't like huge or whatever, like, and like non-dive watches tend to settle like just under 100. That's like around what I've found. But then bracelets and everything throw them off. And then when you're getting to heavy watches, you're in like the 150 plus kind of range.
Yeah.
We used to actually weigh our watches more because people used to complain about that, especially with dive watches. Like, we need to know how much it weighs. And then I ran out of batteries on my kitchen scale and I stopped. So,
and that was the end of that. I could get behind this, though. This should be a thing that maybe we should be talking about.
It's a pretty useful metric in kind of determining how comfortable a watch is. It's, I mean, it's at least as important as the dimensions, I would think, is the weight of the watch.
Yeah, to a degree. Like, if it falls outside of like a certain like standard deviation, I guess, then it would be worth noting. Like, it's super light, it's super heavy. It's,
do we really want to start like yet another thing for people on Instagram or whatever to complain about? Like, you know, like, I don't wear watches that are over 61 grams, please. You know,
imagine, that'll be the new thing. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I've got on a watch that I'm guessing is more than 45 grams. It is the Tudor Black Bay 58 in silver. Was the 925? 925. Yeah. So we got this in the other day, and I got to say that I have not seen pictures that do it justice. In the person, the color is quite lovely on both the dial and of the case. And it's hard to describe. The case is, you can tell it's different. Like, you don't have to be told that that's not steel. Like, it looks a little different, or it looks like something that's been treated, or it has some kind of a bright seal on it. I don't know. But the whole thing is brushed. And
finally.
Yeah. and it's got the what they call taupe for the dial and the bezel. Now, you don't see a lot of taupe in it.
No, I feel like I'm fairly attuned to colors.
Yeah.
Like a,
yeah, and we all recently took a hue test with it for our eyes because we were having an argument over this one particular color. I believe it was on a Grand Seiko, whether it was orange or it was red. So we all took this test, and then I think we all still came up with different answers.
Yeah, I mean, then we all passed the test. Yeah,
we all got perfect scores, and we still can't agree.
So imagine that. It's a... it's subjective, right? So maybe there's something subjective about this. But
I would safely call it a warm gray.
Warm gray.
But I feel like when you're getting into taupe, you're just in a slightly kind of hazy shades of khakis and like other light colors. Like, if taupe straps are not that color typically, and to me, it's closer to a neutral gray than it is even like a brown. You know what I mean? I mean, granted that taupe is a warm gray, but I just, you know, if I were to get really, really picky about naming it, to me, it hasn't quite hit the taupe level of warmth.
Do you think using the word taupe, though, is like a turnoff?
Does
it conjure up like browns? And it's like, I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like taupe is like a funny color. Like, I don't know. I feel like stockings come in taupe. You know what I mean?
Okay. Stocking taupe.
But so do watch drafts. I don't know. Yeah. But it's not a color that I think everybody can conjure in their head because they're not necessarily familiar with it.
Well, whatever you want to call it, it certainly looks nice.
It's very, very attractive,
But it's a silver case, and I know that we are a little conflicted, I think it's fair to say, on this case being made of silver. And maybe that's one of the watches that we can talk about. Before we get to that, there's something I wanted to ask you about, Zach Weiss. Okay. Last week we had Blake Mallon on the podcast, which is great. It's always fun to talk to him. He's got a great insight, I think. And I asked him about the 10 years of Worn and Wound. You at the beginning of the month, you wrote an editor's note kind of talking about the past 10 years, which is great. Definitely read it if you haven't. We'll put a link down below. And I asked him how he, you know, now that this is his livelihood and the livelihood of others that rely on this, like, where he goes and what he talks about with watches to keep it fun for him, you know, I know, and it's the same for you, right? Like, this is your livelihood.
Yeah.
What do you do to kind of keep this hobby fun for yourself and keep yourself, reminded and planted? And, these are things that I really like and enjoy.
Yeah.
And it's not just like become a 9-to-5 job that you have to do, right?
Yeah. You know, and I feel like obviously my role within the company has changed over the years and continues to kind of change as the company changes. Cause, you know, just like as a founder or whatever, it's kind of hard to be sort of pigeonholed into one position. And so I have a lot to do with the shop, obviously, but then I also do have some to do with the editorial side. So for me, I think I still get a lot of the kick out of it from the times when I do get to write, which, you know, granted, isn't as often as I used to be. You know, you guys are doing all the press releases. I do maybe like a review or a hands-on a month, maybe a little bit more than that. But yeah, those are the times when I get to dig in, think about watches again, and kind of, you know, a way that's just about kind of my enthusiasm for it and for the design of them. And then, you know, and then I am unfortunately a little probably too engaged in social media. And then I
aren't we
kind
all
of like
though,
by
right?
default will pick up my phone and scroll through Instagram. And I, but, you know, as the community's grown there, so it has kind of my own like internal kind of group of people I talk to there. So it's a really nice, just people I chat with in DMs and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's always nice because it's really like, it has nothing to do with Worn and Wound. It's purely like, did you see this watch? What do you think of it? Yada, yada. And so that's always fun. But, you know, especially with this year, without having to be able to go to meetups and just kind of talk watches with people who are, you know, outside of the company, you know, that's been kind of a nice outlet.
Yeah.
But then I think, you know, you can also attest that like probably on a daily basis for at least for a little while, we kind of just shoot the shit about watches in the office, about some release or something that came out in a way that has nothing to do with what we're going to do with it on the site or at all. It's just, you know, purely opinion. And I'm kind of amazed that 10 years into this, that that's still fun. You know,
do you still find yourself like on a Saturday afternoon, if you got nothing else to do, you like in eBay looking at certain watches or,
Totally.
It's stuff that you're still consuming, even when you don't have to be consuming it.
I consume watches all the time. It's like, I'm actually trying to find things in my life to help me get away from that a little bit.
Stamp
it's
collecting
like,
or model building.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully not another thing that involves me buying stuff, but like a little bit of the, to kind of combat the sort of consumerist tendency of it, which is like, I want to be able to appreciate watches without feeling the need to buy them. Which is a constant conflict, also something that comes up in the office. We're like, are you gonna get it? Am I gonna get it? What's gonna happen with this? You know, rather than just, you know, oh man, that's cool, move on kind of a thing. But yeah, no, I'm constantly on watch recon on both my phone and my computer. For no reason either. I just go there. It's like, sometimes I type in news and I go to Google News. Sometimes I type in Watch Recon and I go and look at watches for 2 hours and I have my alerts. I still have alerts for like watches I've already bought and I'll just look at what
just
other
versions.
It's
Blake, last week, what was he wearing? The Meritech Pilot watch? Yeah. It was like 46 millimeters. Yep. It was, you know, and he kind of told a story about him buying it you guys like sitting around drinking beers and talking about watches in the early days. And then he puts it on and it kind of takes him back to that time. Do you have any watches in particular that you wear to like go back to, oh, this was a lot more fun when I had this, or it's kind of like a nostalgia play?
You know, I don't wear them that much is the thing, but like I do have watches around like that. For me, it would definitely be like the Seiko 5 SRP watches, like those little field watches. I've had four of those. This is a pretty funny story, but somebody at one of the windups, like this family came up to me and they were like, what's this watch? And I was like, oh, that's the Seiko 5. And it was on our straps. That's how we used to like just put our watches and straps on our watches, help sell the straps at our events. And they were like, you know, can we buy that watch? I was like, oh, well, that's my watch. Like, I mean, it's not for sale. They're like, no, we know it's your watch. Like, and like their son, who wasn't there, is a big Worn and Wound fan. They wanted something that like belonged to me. And like, I sold it to them for the price of the watch. Like, I wasn't trying to take, like, it was whatever, $70 or something. So that one's gone. And hopefully at a new home. And hopefully that person's listening. And so I hope you're enjoying your green SNK? Either way, the green Seiko 5. So that one's gone.
If you are that kid, by the way, that needed that watch, we want to hear from
you. Yeah, please reach out. And then I broke the khaki one. I was trying to put a strap on it, and it flew. And the rotor is no longer attached to the movement. It's in my desk, though.
Okay.
And then the blue one is now in possession of my girlfriend. And wait, the other way around. My girlfriend is in possession of my watch. That's the right way. Okay, sure. Or maybe I said that right the first time. I don't even know. And she wears it all the time. Though now she's amassing other watches. So I'm only left with just the simple black dial. And I don't wear it enough. But that watch is like pure nostalgia for me. That was like, I remember finding those and being like, oh my god, there's a $60 Seiko on Amazon. That's automatic. That's impossible. And yeah, so and whatever. Great. So yeah, and it's great. It's great. But then a lot of the other watches I probably would I've sold in the past. Like so, it's a little sad.
But. No, that's interesting. And I think we all have kind of similar inroads to the hobby around some of these old Seiko watches. And I'm sure many of you listening have very similar stories about how you got into the hobby around these watches as well. So I think we'll be doing something soon that will be kind of special around some of these references and our feelings on them and how they kind of pulled us into the hobby many years ago, which is great. So let's start talking about some of the watches that have come out over the past month here. I guess we can start most recently today as we record this. There's a couple of pretty interesting releases actually that that happened. One of them was Zachy wrote this up. It was a Bell & Ross watch done for the Rake and Revolution. This was actually a pair of watches, and you came up with a phrase which I really liked: "boozy chronographs." So the themes of these watches were the Negroni and the Aperol Spritz.
Yes,
I think. Tell us about these.
So these are Bell & Ross Belly Tanker chronographs. Very simple, kind of vintage inspired. Two register chronographs, and one is a has like a crimsony coral dial with black subdials, and that one is it's called the Negroni Time, the hashtag Negroni Time
watch. wait, the actual name of the watch includes the hashtag?
It does, yes. These are, you know, built for social media.
Welcome to 2021.
Yeah. So on the back of the watch where it says the name, is going to be a hashtag on there.
Yeah. Oh, you know, presumably. I'm not sure I saw or included a photo of the case. I'm looking at the article now just to see if I...
Are the Speedy Tuesday Speedmasters from Fratello, do those include a hashtag somewhere?
I don't think that was like the official name of them, was it?
I can't know. It's been a little while. But they were Speedy Tuesday. Anyway.
Man, I don't know.
I mean, they were definitely inspired by a hashtag. Like, that was like that was an interesting moment, you know, when that watch came out. And, you know, there's this, you know, there's a Speedmaster for all of time that's inspired by a social media campaign. But now we have Bell & Ross's that are, you know, kind of similar. And honestly, like, I didn't really think much of it when I, you know, when I saw the press release. It just seems normal now to just see hashtags everywhere. But
yeah. All right. Maybe it's just me.
Which, in addition to being inspired by a hashtag, is also inspired by a cocktail.
By a cocktail.
Which is also like... I don't know. I mean, whatever. Like, it's an interesting cocktail. It's a cocktail we're both fans of. Blake Bettner makes a mean Negroni.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Negronis. What is the origin of this? Why is Negroni being steeped in, like, watch
culture?
What's
the funniest, like, the funniest thing, like, so when I was in design school, there's a bar in Milan that you go to, or people would go to during Salone, which is, like, the big design festival. And I'm going to kill myself that I can't remember. But, like, their thing was, like, they had a version of the Negroni there that had, like, champagne in it. Mm. And, like, so everyone's drinking it all over the place. And I don't know, I have these, like, old memories. And now they're getting mixed up with Watch World stuff. It's very strange.
Yeah. It's all the same.
the Negroni has been having a moment in watch culture for a while now. It's kind of, I mean, I like a Negroni. Like, there are, you know, cocktails I enjoy more than a Negroni. But, you know. It's fine. So anyway, yeah. So we have the Negroni Time, and then there's also the hashtag Spritz O'Clock.
Which I cringed a little there. I'm sorry, guys.
I mean, I didn't come up with the names. I have to say, I really like the aesthetics of these watches. The Spritz O'Clock, the hashtag Spritz O'Clock, is more kind of like a traditional orange, and it has subdials that are kind of like a slightly darker shade. I think that's the one I prefer. It's just a little bit more. I don't know. I like the orange tone a little bit better.
But, it's quite attractive, and it reminds me actually of the Diver 65 that was either Revolution or Rake that had the kind of amber honey dial, which I've seen in person, and is one of the more most attractive Diver 65 / just like cool dials I've seen. I also just feel really like, I don't know, like my tastes have become like things that, you know, you think like are yours are kind of like just such a part of the world now. Cause like, yeah, the like the cocktails I'll go out and get at brunch are like Negroni, and my girlfriend will have an Aperol Spritz. And I realize now we need the watches to go along with this. Or do we just need to change our cocktail choices? I don't know.
You need one. Yeah. Think of how many likes you would get on Instagram.
Yeah. For a mere like $10,000 of watches.
Yeah, but so these were these are limited edition.
50 each.
50 each. Oh, that's pretty.
$4,500.
Okay.
You know, which is, I think, you know, right around the standard price for this. I think it might be a very slight premium for the limited edition, but yeah, no, I we'll link it up in the show notes. But there's a nice article by Wei Ko, the founder of Revolution and the Rake, kind of introducing these watches, and he kind of writes very you know, enthusiastically, and I think from a genuine place about, you know, his, you know, love of like the cocktail culture and, you know, getting back out into the world after being stuck in a, you know, pandemic for a year. And you know, I don't know, like there's something just kind of fun and playful about these watches that I think is is appealing.
They're very attractive.
They're nice looking watches for sure. And it's got that punch hole date down there at like 4 o'clock, I think.
Right? Yeah, the 4:30. Yeah.
4:30.
That's definitely like triggering to some people.
But it's color matched to the dial, right?
Yeah. I think it looks awesome. That's the kind of date placement they do it. Sin does it, a handful of other brands have done it, where like the date is corrected also within that.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic. I don't care that it breaks up the dial.
When a date is on a colorful dial, I almost like it when they lean into it a little bit more and like maybe give the date disc like a complimentary color, so it even like pops off there a little bit more. Like that Christopher Ward C65 chronograph, the wild thing, whatever they called it, that did that, right? Because the dial was kind of colorful, and then the date wheel was like its own color.
It was like its own roulette thing. Did they do a roulette on that?
Was it? Oh man, that's been a while since we've talked. Yeah. But I remember thinking and commenting at the time, like, this is really cool. If you're going to do it, if you're going to have a date, like, lean into it.
Well, super sneak preview. You might be seeing something that fulfills that kind of idea soon from us as well.
Okay.
Super sneak preview. That's totally vague and terrible. But
I'm not going to press you on that.
No. Yeah. But you also might not. All right, so
there was another watch that was released today that also had a really interesting dial, and this was just kind of a surprise, actually. They started teasing it earlier in the week, and this was a Ming watch, his first collaboration watch, done a collaboration with Messina Lab of our friend William Messina. So he started teasing this earlier in the week, and I shot him a note and said, you know, what's going on here? Hoping to get some kind of a sneak peek. And then he was kind enough to send us over a sample of the Honey colorway. This comes in honey and black. The Honey colorway that we had, it's got the kind of three-dimensional honeycomb dial on it. There's no other real kind of points of contrast on the dial. Is this would you call this dial honey?
Oh, God. Does the
honeycomb pattern kind of like prime your brain to think that?
Well, certainly, and I think it's in the group of tones for honey. I feel like if you have honey that kind of dries out and it gets that almost like milky look because like the water's kind of gone some more sugary.
Yeah,
This is not the first time we've had this conversation. Yeah. Like whereas other honeys are sort of amber in color, and then they can even be like really dark. But yeah, this is definitely on the like light, like a. Yellow side of honey.
It was.
It's a beautiful color though, because it's not gold either. It's not a yellow gold.
It's not salmon.
It's a unique color.
It really is. They did a nice job on this one. It's a 38 millimeters, 10 millimeters thick, 44 millimeters from lug to lug, and it's using the Sellita SW330, I believe. That's been modified by Schwartz at the end to incorporate the independently jumping. Jumping adjustable hour hand, right?
It jumps. It's a jumping hour hand.
Yeah. So it's like a little bit of added convenience there, I suppose. If you travel or you know, I guess find yourself in the time zone next to you or something like that. Often
daylight savings time.
Daylight savings time. Yeah. There you go. So there's no running seconds hand here. It's the hands. I like the hands on this. I saw that on social. They were getting a little bit of flack, but I think they're very cool hands. They're kind of like outlines of teardrops, but then they're it's just like a negative space in between.
Sapphire?
The hands? I don't know.
Material? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how they've done that, but they look very nice. They're kind of like floating above. And then, of course, the hour markers, numerals are etched into the underside of the crystal and then filled with loom. Mm-hmm. So, and I commented on this in the article, I really like this approach when you've got an interesting dial underneath. And I think I said it'd be nice to see Grand Seiko do something like this, who makes really stunning, gorgeous dials. If they kind of took everything off the dial and put the you know, the hour markers however they wanted to on the underside of the crystal, or even just reduce the dial to only the hour markers and nothing else, I think that'd be pretty effective.
Hmm.
What do you guys think? Zach Kazan, what do you think?
I love Grand Seiko hour markers. I don't think they need to do anything to change those. It's like one of my favorite things.
They're nice.
Grand Seiko watch is the, you know, like you just, you loop the hour markers and it's like you're looking at something completely different that you don't see, like when you're just looking at it with the naked eye. So like, I love the Grand Seiko hour markers. I like this, this Ming Messina collaboration quite a bit. I think that the honey color is really nice. Blake, you commented to me that your skin is too pale to pull, to pull this off. I'm similarly afflicted. I don't think I could, I could get away with it, but I really like the black, variant, which I know you guys didn't have in the office, but, you know, photos turning up online, that one looks really nice. And, you know, like these are like two solid, you know, kind of like design forward brands. And I think it's cool that they collaborated, and this is a you know, very cool watch. It goes on sale, you know, as we're speaking next week, and there aren't a lot of them, so I would expect it to sell
50 of the honey and 150 of the black dial. So I imagine they will go quick, like all other Ming releases. And there's something else that's maybe worth noting on here that I think we had briefly chatted about when we learned about this. So he just recently did, was it last month, the 1709 release in the blue and the burgundy dial, which were lovely. And he had kind of a three-stage approach to that release, the first being offered to existing customers that had bought from him before, the second batch being a first-come, first-serve at a certain time, and then a third batch being just an open 10-minute window for orders. And if you got your order in that 10-minute window, you're going to get one. You're just going to wait a while for it.
Yeah.
Right? So this watch that was just released today is presumably using the exact same case and movement. These shipments are supposed to start in July. So I guess this is something that they could have you know, they could have built more of those other 1709s, but they kind of reserved them for this collaboration. I haven't seen any real salt online about this, but...
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tricky situation, and it's interesting that this release kind of supersedes the main one in terms of its, like, delivery, you know?
Like, if you got like, in that last 10-minute window and you're waiting until, like, the summer of 22 to get your watch...
Yeah, like it, some of us might be.
might be.
But yeah, you know, it's such a different. It's so like it's interesting that this is an issue now that these brands have reached such points of hype that like they're selling out at such wild rates, and you know, the demand is so high and the delay is so long that like that this issue could even occur, where like had it just been a watch they put up for sale. It's sold, you know, and frankly, even if they just released the watch and let's say they were available at a store right now, like the normal 1709, you can go add to cart. Like, I always feel like there's always this issue, and this is something we kind of think about with LEs ourselves. Like, when we release an LE not that long after a launch of something else, like, will people be a little bit, oh, well, I wish I kind of waited for that or something? Like, this is like that to the extreme now, you know, because on top of maybe they just would prefer it, but like they could get it sooner.
Yeah.
I'm a very impatient person, especially when I spend a decent amount of money. So, like,
sure.
I would have opted for a sooner kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a bridge they'll have to cross. Either way, yeah, I haven't seen anything about that yet. So
yeah. Well, that's good. It's all in our hands. Maybe we are exacerbating the problem by talking about it the way we do.
Yeah.
And that kind of like builds up a, like when I say things like it's probably gonna go fast. Is that kind of like pouring gasoline on it?
Yeah, probably. Because
people are like, oh crap, I better get in there and get it before the time runs out or before they're all sold out. You know, I want to take part in this hype thing because, you know, idiots like us keep talking about it like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we're part of the problem.
There are so few of these. I feel like these would like legitimately go fast even if we weren't talking about them. Like,
yeah.
This
would be highly sought after.
I think this will be a instantaneous sellout kind of a thing where like there'll be so many people camped out at the site at that time that clicking add to cart at once, the inventory will be instantaneously dispersed.
Yep.
And there'll be a lot of people who are going to get to check out without a watch actually available, unfortunately.
Well, hopefully it's the people that want to buy it and keep it and wear it around that are that are getting it. You know, it's a, you know, I don't like seeing there's parts of kind of like sneaker collecting and other things that, you know, when people build these bots and they know that it's going to sell for a premium down the line, so they can just kind of inundate the system with whatever they do. I don't know how that all works, but
yeah, that'd be a real shame. I feel like, I mean, so whatever the Ming and you know, in that three-tier system, I mean, they're trying to combat that exact thing, and I think brands like them and Corona Tokyo and others are looking into who's buying their watches, what are they doing with it. Yeah, because, you know, it's just kind of a distasteful practice that's keeping watches away from, or adding a premium if you want to be an enthusiast and get it later down, you know. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad with that, but I feel like this watch in particular, like, I don't know, this is really, I feel like, a collector's watch. You know what I mean? It's from two kind of houses. I feel like you really, like, Messina to me is almost like the ultimate sort of like insider brand anyway. Yeah. Like, you have to have been so immersed in all this to be aware of him and his work, their time zone exactly. And it's not like super public facing.
Yeah.
And then the runs are so small and the concepts are so specific that, like, you know, I feel like, yeah, it's just, it's made for a hardcore enthusiast anyway. But so yeah, and which is a long way to say, I hope, like you're saying, the right people kind of get it. People really want it. So
yeah. I think it's interesting too that Ming has collaborated with somebody.
Yeah.
In your ideal world, who would you like to see Ming collaborate with next?
Oh my God.
Like other than Warner Bros.
Yeah, I know. That's the obvious. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I feel like what's cool about you know, Ming's old approach to watchmaking is that it's been really, you know, trying to kind of think outside the box and pursue things in a different way, and even almost consciously not participate in, or like not participate, no, but consciously, and I mean, I think he said this on our podcast, like not look at what's going on in trends and everything, because he doesn't want to be like skewed one way or another. He wants this kind of pure design. So I'd love to see him collaborate with somebody or something totally outside of the industry, you know, like, obviously he's a photo guy. I don't know what a collaboration with a photo company would be like, but like, maybe it's even like a materials company or something, like, you know, a plastics or some sort of, you know, I don't know. That's the kind of thing that I feel like would be more interesting to where the watch could go than necessarily. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to do a collaboration with him. Ming, if you're listening, you know, give us a ring.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I think that some gnarly material, I feel like that'd be very cool. Cause like stuff like that sapphire crystal, like, that's something that, I mean, it's been out there. Why are they the first, like, the people to kind of master this technology of milling or etching into a crystal and put lume in it? That seems like something a lot of brands could be doing, but they're not. And it's kind of like, it's that sort of outside of the box thinking and some willingness to do some R&D that's, you know, led to that, led to them being able to do it, and now do it also on a watch that's under $3,000. So yeah, I don't know.
I think that's where I stand. Yeah, I would love to see, I mean, like a Hasselblad Ming watch or something that would be kind of unexpected, cool. Right? Or even going into the more, you know, kind of streetwear scene, you know, I think would be interesting. But it's all like about the concept, I think, there. Mm-hmm. You know, I sense that he's not the kind of guy that's going to put, like, you know, some illustration on the dial and call it a day or something, right? Like, there's gonna,
did a brand do that this week?
Not to like call anybody out or to say that that's a bad thing, you know, but
yeah, I feel like, no, I agree though. I mean, that is, people have their trademark thing, especially when it comes to, I feel like, streetwear and certain things, like their logo is the mark, right? That's kind of what you're, but yeah, I agree. To me, it should be more than that. It's not just a experiment in co-branding, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it's a cool watch. Check out the story on the site right now. We'll put it down below in the show notes. And then one other release that I thought would be worth maybe talking about. Well, actually, you know what? Let me ask you guys. What release really is kind of stuck with you or gotten under your skin here over the past couple months?
Gosh, you know, it's not the most exciting answer. And it's very 2021, but the Carrera, that green Carrera.
Yes.
And I say it's very 2021 because literally every other day there's a watch released for like a green watch, like that brand just discovered green, and it's kind of almost hilarious.
Right. But, yeah, we're in it now.
Yeah, we're truly
in the green dial green stuff. Yeah.
But that was an exceptional green. It just, that, I mean, in photos, granted, we haven't seen it in person, but like, it just, that Carrera just looks so hot. I don't know. And I have the Fairlander Which is sort of a similar teal-y kind of emerald to green kind of color.
There's a lot of blue in that green.
Yeah, exactly. And we know that there's some level of kind of Porsche color tonality influence there, which you were kind of picked up on the Carrera as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I already have a watch that color and I know it's really nice. So I saw it again. And it's like, that's really nice.
Yeah. It's an absolutely lovely color. Yeah. Zach, what do you think of this watch?
Oh, it's great. Yeah. It's a awesome color. I own a green watch. I wear a green watch, more often than I don't. My Grand Seiko has kind of become, something of a daily wearer over the last, couple months. I've just been wearing it a ton. And I kind of thought I was at peak green. Like, it's sort of become a joke, every time we see a green watch, come through the transom. It's just a little another green watch, what else is new. Mm-hmm. But this is just really nice. It's the Carrera is a great design anyway, and they really just nailed the color. It's not like it's not like other greens that we've seen. There's as Zach said, there's some blue in it. It's just very cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Is this a limited edition?
I can't recall.
So yeah, 500.
Mm-hmm. 500.
I think all of the kind of those heritage style Carreras seem
to
have
all limited edition.
I think so. I think so. I know the Montreal was.
That was a nice looking watch too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, those are all of the ones they brought out in that series. I mean,
it's hard to make a Carrera look.
Yeah.
Ugly. Exactly. I mean, it's just a good looking. Exactly. Base design.
I haven't seen one of them in the metal in some time. I mean, I don't know how the 39 millimeter case wears, those 90s ones, which were the 36 millimeter, which were true reissues. Those are perfect, but I can't imagine it's anything but kind of great on the wrist. I mean,
yeah, it has to be. Yeah. The last one I had on the wrist was the Fragment collab that they did. And I did not care for that came on a bund strap, I think. I did not care for the execution of that bund particularly. But I'm real keen to see one of these. This one in particular, I'd really like to see this one in the flesh. Yeah, yeah. In all the pictures that I think we had or that were in the whatever link I clicked on, were on background that was the same color.
Yeah, so it was a little hard to differentiate. They have a lot of funky colors in there. It's and they kind of affect your perception. Like some are kind of yellow or very punchy. I mean, it's a nice campaign. That's obviously about bold color, but then you're kind of what color is the green?
Yeah,
really?
You just want to see it on the thing. Yeah, 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 definitely. And we're obviously experts in hues.
We can't name it a very, very, very specific name right now. So
Well, yeah. I mean, nice job, Tagore, on this. This is the kind of green that if you're gonna do a green, make it something unique like this. Yeah. It's stunning. I think a Smyrna green was the color that it reminded me of. Of Porsche's green. That's been happening a lot lately. Zach, I made a comment to you earlier today about those, the Negroni watch looking like BMW's Sakir orange.
Which is
a very lovely shade of orange, I think.
Interesting.
Which is nice. It tells me they thought green is becoming a thing. How can we make it ours and not just make a green dial for the sake of making a green dial, because that's what customers are buying these days.
Yeah.
I guess. And so, and Longines did as well. It's just everywhere. It's unavoidable. It's nice to have more options though, right? That's never a bad thing. So, so no complaints here. One watch that did release that did not come in a green dial, for better or worse, was a watch from, Serica, the French brand. And this the 5303. This was their dive watch, they released. So they had the 42. The number is escaping me now. Gosh, of the field watch that they released earlier. That I was quite fond of that watch.
4512.
4512. Yeah,
that number is in my head.
Yeah,
for some reason. Yeah.
So this is a dive watch, and it is what would you call this? I don't know. There's something about it that feels kind of heritage or historical, but there's something that feels wholly original about it. And it's kind of a mashup of different things as well. The twisted lug, the really funky end link that's in there on the mesh bracelet, and then how the hour markers are treated on the ends of those really long. It's a very interesting looking watch.
For me, it's I feel if you saw that on a forum or in a catalog from one of those kind of odder French dive watch brands from the 60s, like Triton or ZRC. And like that was their briefly lived military watch or something. You'd be like, that makes sense. 100%.
Right in. Yep. Yeah. And the split bezel.
Yeah, the split bezel is very cool. And, you know, obviously there's like hints of, I mean, mostly Omega, I'd say, like in the watch, the 300, but it's to me is quite also far enough away that it's once again, it feels more like it's from that era than it does, than it feels like it's like trying to bring those things to mind. Yeah, it's very cool. And, you know, it's sterile dial also, which seems to be something they're sticking with, which is clearly like a military nod as well. Yeah, it's strange and yet very handsome. And it has a cool movement in it. They use this new Sopron?
It is a Sopron. Newton. Well, yeah, the Newton. That's right. Yeah. That's what it is. So it's a supposedly more robust. It's got like a redesigned balance bridge, I think.
It might be full.
Like a full bridge. Yeah.
Like a full bridge.
It's a very, cool. very interesting watch. It's still like, I don't know, Zach, what's your take on this? Because I know that you're a little sensitive to just kind of like historic design that's kind of brought back, but this doesn't feel like that, but maybe there's hints of that in there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like something, like definitely looks like something out of the past, but it doesn't look like anything specific out of the past. It's just sort of you know, I think Zach really hit the nail on the head. It looks like something that you would like, you know, like a, you know, like a oddball, like kind of like 1960s era dive watch that like maybe existed for like a minute, you know, like in the span of watch history, and it's just kind of like lost to time. It looks like something that very much could have been made in, you know, in the mid 60s and just completely forgotten about. I think it's like very kind of charmingly odd. Like there's pretty much like every little design detail is weird in some way. And I like that about it. It somehow all kind of comes together. I really love the end link design. I just think that's incredibly cool. It sort of reminds me a little bit of the Tudor Black Bay P01 a little bit, but it isn't like
without the huge long lug though.
Right. Yeah. It's like I kind of like wish the P01 like looked more like that. It'd be you know, more appealing. And I'm not like a hater on the P01. Like I think it's you know, I think it's fine. That watch has its fans and, you know, that's cool. But it's really fun. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing one in person at some point. The measurements make it seem like it would wear really well. It's just under 40 millimeters. Mm-hmm. It's about 12 millimeters thick. Very, very interesting watch.
Well, I've been bugging Jerome for a while about getting our hands on one.
I'm sure he will soon.
I think that we will have him. We'll probably have him on the podcast at some point to chat about.
They also, and you know, one thing that's it's just cool about it, you know, and they do this with their other watches, is that you can order it off the bat, left or right crown, right?
That's right. Like Destro. Yeah, but that is a cool.
It's just
thing.
Nice, you know. I mean,
it makes it even more weird. Like getting this in the left hand configuration. Like that's what I would do personally if I was gonna. Yeah, buy one.
It's got to be a simple thing to do. Well, if there's no date,
right? That like, probably is because they just have to install the dial upside down. That's there's probably a little more to it than that, but yeah, set the hands right.
Yeah, the dial upside down, right? It can't be that easy, surely. Yeah. Otherwise, like I feel like a lot of brands would offer, like obviously.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of like.
Well, when there's no date, otherwise.
Yeah, when there's no date, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, it's more labor, it's more time. I don't think you want to like, they probably assemble them in much smaller batches or almost to order. Otherwise, you know, you don't want to get left with a bunch of one that is not getting ordered. Yeah. I don't know.
You have a watch like that, don't you, Zach?
Yeah, Tudor Pelagos LHD.
Yeah.
Maybe they just save it for the limited editions.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just I'll have around. A sub-collection of Destro watches at some point. It'll be. Maybe that'll be like my thing. Yeah. A lot of lefty watches.
Do you wear your watch on your right wrist, Zach?
I'm left-handed, yeah. I've always worn my watch on my right wrist.
Me too.
Regardless of the crown position.
Regardless, yeah. Same here. I don't the shape of my right wrist is just like slightly different. And like the boniness of my left wrist makes it uncomfortable for me to like a watch doesn't nestle into that wrist very well, so I've just kind of always, and I have pictures of myself wearing like G-Shocks and stuff when I was 8 years old, and it's even back then it's on my right wrist, so
I feel like immediately uncomfortable if I put a watch on my on my left wrist and just feels and just so unnatural, which I imagine is what people who, you know, wear their watches on their left wrist day in and day out feel like when they put it on their
100%. Right wrist. I occasionally try because like a watch will come in the office and I'll be like, oh, I don't want to take off my watch because I'm that lazy or whatever. So I put it on my right wrist. I'm like, this is freaking me out.
And I did that on the the Instagram live this morning that we did with the Ming. Yeah, I was putting it out of here because I had the watch on the Tudor on the other wrist, and I almost dropped it on the because it's such a weird. I don't know how to manipulate my hand that way. Thankfully,
I'm glad you didn't drop the Ming on Instagram live.
I did not drop it on live. Yeah, I would have no excuses for that. Yeah. But I guess then they would have to charge me for it and just
you just have to keep it.
You own it.
Yeah. That's a surefire way to get one, right? All right, so another watch that I know that you were quite fond of, Zach, was a new quartz watch from Grand Seiko.
Yes,
these GMTs.
Yes,
this was the watch that spawned our whole color discussion, right? Because one of them is black with either red or orange.
Well, we've decided on the color name. We had a long chat on this, and it is papaya.
Ripe papaya.
Yes. Go and Google that and you'll be like, yes, you are correct.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, these are gorgeous. I don't recall the series name or the SKU of these. I mean, they're Grand Seiko, so it's some series of letters and numbers that one has to refresh their
might
mind
be a fax
of,
machine,
and I do not know.
Might be a Grand Seiko.
Yeah. It was a series of three watches with very Grand Seiko barrel cases, beautifully faceted 40 millimeter barrel cases with ceramic bezels that feature 24-hour indices on them. So that's sort of this new combination. I believe that case exists elsewhere in the kind of amagnetic 9Fs, that the sort of sporty ones that might have been JDM. I'm not 100% sure, but that is a case they used before, and now they added this ceramic bezel to it, and then they used a 9F GMT movement. So it's an interesting watch, also because of how it sort of has a sibling watch, which we also have in for review, which I also don't know the name of offhand, in that there's these
SBGE.
I really don't know at all, so I'm not going to be able to confirm
what it was, because I was wearing it last week. And
it was
really growing on me, that one.
And so that's the 40 millimeter spring drive GMT with the fixed ceramic bezel. So now, and that one's, I'm going to say neighboring or in the neighborhood of $6,000-ish. Maybe?
Yeah, six and some change.
Yeah. So these came in and they are four-ish, except for the LE, which is... Yeah,
they cut a little flack for that, didn't they?
Yeah, and so that is actually notably on the... That is certainly on the high side for one of their 9F quartz movements, and that is in the trend of the brand has been moving up. That said, you know, they have a little more features here. I feel like they also, if you kind of, like, examine the catalog, you'll see, like, why, like, certain cases are at certain prices, and then little features like a ceramic bezel is going to up it, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not justifying, I'm not saying I like it, but I feel like they probably have a logic to where that sits exactly in the family.
And to be clear, we don't set the prices on these things.
No, we certainly do not.
So don't at us.
But yeah, I mean, just on a pure, on the face value of it, I just found them really attractive. And, you know, I always like it when a brand looks like itself. You know what I mean? Like, and that's something I think Grand Seiko is very good at, particularly in the last handful of years with between their textures and everything else. They're, you know, like the one that I actually own now in the 44 GS case, which is their historic case, like that's so Grand Seiko. It has these facets. It speaks to the grammar of design, which is kind of the genesis of their sort of aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And this case also very much speaks to that as well. So, and it's just, it's cool all around. It's got a textured, funky textured dial. Yeah. I don't know. It hits all the buttons for me. And then there's the three. There's a blue one, black and papaya.
Black and papaya. Yeah.
And then like the limited edition is like this like blackened gold and black and gold thing. But it almost looks like the dial's a little warm there too. It's an interesting dial.
Yeah. There's always some surprises on Grand Seiko dials that you don't really pick up on. Like when then you see one in the flesh and it's like, oh wow, there's a lot going on here to appreciate. You let me try on. You wore Grand Seiko the other day.
Yeah.
And wow, that wears very nicely, I got to say. I don't know what I was expecting, but well, I mean, like visually, there's a lot going on and on the case, and I don't know, on the wrist, it just kind of like tucks in really neatly.
Yeah, you know, I should review that one at some point, but I'm definitely living with it right now, and So I'll do a long-term owner's review at some point. But that 44 GS case, like, you know, the dimensions will read a certain height. I think that one's in the around the 12 millimeters. But the kind of the mid case ends sort of abruptly, and then there's like a case, and then the case back sort of comes out from underneath it. And so the case kind of wears more like where the mid case ends than the case back. So yeah, definitely on your wrist, it's has a thinner, kind of more comfortable feel, which is part of what I like about it. Kind of part of what I end up, I mean, I wear that thing every day now. So yeah, it's like why I don't want to take it off. It just fits so well.
Yeah, they're cool watches for sure. Zach Kazan, is there any other final releases that that you want to talk about?
You know, I actually really like that multicolored G-Shock that yeah, we wrote about, or that was on the site a few days ago. I've never owned a full metal G-Shock, and I've kind of been wanting to like dip my toe into that water a little bit. And there's just something like so fun about the multicolored titanium bracelet. It's just I just find that really appealing.
I like that. I like how they did that as well. What is it? $1,700?
It's up there, $1,600-$1,700.
Yeah, it's full like titanium just in that realm of, you know.
I think, you know, I remember when they started coming out with these particularly more expensive ones in that $1,600-$1,700 range. I think it was the camo titanium one was first, which that one is just so cool in person. And it's also interesting because they're very expensive, but they use probably one of the most basic of the G-Shock modules, which is like the 5600. I mean, it's still got awesome features, but it's not like one of their crazy things. And to me, it's like this is the G-Shock for, you know, the collectors who have been into these things for 20-odd years and are now like, they're just so diehard. And at first you might be like, there's who's out there, and like they keep making them. So there's a lot of them, and they really like these watches. So as absurd as it is, and yeah, I'm not about to run and give a $1,700 G-Shock, like they've kind of like honed in on this audience. And, you know, I think there's some cool tech and stuff that goes into making these. Like, how do you make a bright pink titanium? Like, they had to work with special companies and things like that. It's very neat. I don't know.
It's weird.
It's very
in
weird
like
too.
The best way. I really like what they did there.
Yeah.
If I was like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm just not over that hurdle of spending that much on a G-Shock. Not that I like G-Shock a lot, but that's a lot of money for a G-Shock.
That's a lot of money to spend on, like, you know,
that's
like
a lot of
super
money in general,
casual kind of like summer beater watch.
Yeah.
You know? Especially when G-Shock has so many great alternatives that are, you know, like $100, $150, you know, like that's kind of like what I'm used to spending on a G-Shock. And I've owned a bunch at that price point. Yeah, I don't know. Like for a premium G-Shock among the ones that they've released relatively recently, like that's definitely among my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, what did you think of the releases over the past month? Let us know in the comments below. And if you have any thoughts on the red that Grand Seiko is using,
or orange.
You disagree with the or orange, or you disagree with the papaya, let us know or set us straight down in the comments. We will be back next week with more watches, maybe a guest. I don't know yet. Probably back in studio, hopefully. At any rate, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.